Chapter 8. Show in any part of the world, but to suggest they come hither, as to a market, is so coarse a jest, that the gentlemen that wait on them hither, for they rarely come, but in good company, ought to resent and correct him for it. It is true, Barry Fair, like Bartholomew Fair, is a fair for diversion, more than for trade, and it may be a fair for toys and for trinkets, which the ladies may think fit, to lay out some of their money in, as they see occasion. But to judge from thence, that the knight's daughters of Norfolk, Cambridgeshire, and Suffolk, that is to say, for it cannot be understood any otherwise, the daughters of all the gentry of the three counties, come hither to be picked up, is a way of speaking I never before heard any author have the assurance to make use of in print. The assembly he justly commends for the bright appearance of the beauties, but with a sting in the tail of this compliment, where he says they seldom end without some considerable match or intrigue, and yet he owns that during the fair these assemblies are held every night. Now that these fine ladies go intriguing every night, and that too after the comedy is done, which is after the fair and raffling is over for the day, so that it must be very late. This is a terrible character for the ladies of Barry, and intimates, in short, that most of them are loose women, which is a horrid abuse upon the whole country. Now, though I like not the assemblies at all, and shall in another place give them something of their due, yet having the opportunity to see the fair at Barry, and to see that there were, indeed, abundance of the finest ladies, or as fine as any in Britain, yet I must own the number of the ladies at the comedy, or at the assembly, is no way equal to the number that are seen in the town, much less are they equal to the whole body of the ladies in the three counties. And I must also add, that though it is far from true, that all that appear at the assembly are there for matches or intrigues, yet I will venture to say, that they are not the worst of the ladies who stay away, neither are they the fewest in number or the meanest in beauty, but just the contrary. And I do not at all doubt, but that the scandalous liberty some take at those assemblies, will in time bring them out of credit with the virtuous part of the sex here, as it has done already in Kent and other places, and that those ladies who most value their reputation will be seen less there than they have been. For though the institution of them has been innocent and virtuous, the ill use of them, and the scandalous behavior of some people at them, will in time arm virtue against them, and they will be laid down as they have been set up without much satisfaction. But the beauty of this town consists in the number of gentry who dwell in and near it, the polite conversation among them, the affluence and plenty they live in, the sweet air they breathe in, and the pleasant country they have to go abroad in. Here is no manufacturing in this town, or but very little, except spinning, the chief trade of the place depending upon the gentry who live there, or near it, and who cannot fail to cause trade enough by the expense of their families, and equipages among the people of a county town. They have but a very small river, or rather but a very small branch of a small river, at this town, which runs from hence to Milton Hall, on the edge of the fens. However, the town and gentlemen about have been at the charge, or have so encouraged the engineer who was at the charge, that they have made this river navigable to the said Milton Hall, from whence there is a navigable dike, called Milton Hall Drain, which goes into the river House, and so to Lynn. So that all their coal and wine, iron, lead, and other heavy goods, are brought by water from Lynn, or from London, by the way of Lynn, to the great ease of the tradesmen. This town is famous for two great events. One was that in the year 1447, in the 25th year of Henry VI, a parliament was held here. The other was, that at the meeting of this parliament, the great Humphrey, Duke of Gloucester, regent of the kingdom during the absence of King Henry V, and the minority of Henry VI, and to his last hour the safeguard of the whole nation, and darling of the people, was basely murdered here, by whose death the gate was opened to that dreadful war between the houses of Lancaster and York, which ended in the confusion of that very race who are supposed to have contrived that murder. From St. Edmund's Bury I returned by Stowmarket and Needham to Ipswich, that I might keep as near the coast as was proper to my designed circuit or journey, and from Ipswich, to visit the sea again, I went to Woodbridge, and from thence to Orford, on the seaside. Woodbridge has nothing remarkable, but that it is a considerable market for butter and corn, to be exported to London. For now begins that part which is ordinarily called High Suffolk, which, being a rich soil, is for a long tract of ground wholly employed in dairies, and they again famous for the best butter, and perhaps the worst cheese, in England. The butter is barreled, or often pickled up in small casks, and sold, not in London only, but I have known a firkin of Suffolk butter sent to the West Indies, and brought back to England again, and has been perfectly good and sweet, as at first. The port for the shipping of their Suffolk butter is chiefly Woodbridge, which for that reason is full of corn factors and butter factors, some of whom are very considerable merchants. From hence, turning down to the shore, we see Orfordness, a noted point of land for the guide of the colliers and coasters, and a good shelter for them to ride under when a strong northeast wind blows and makes a foul shore on the coast. South of the Ness is Orford Haven, being the mouth of two little rivers meeting together. It is a very good harbor for small vessels, but not capable of receiving a ship of burden. Orford was once a good town, but is decayed, and as it stands on the land side of the river the sea daily throws up more land to it, and falls off itself from it, as if it was resolved to disown the place, and that it should be a seaport no longer. A little farther lies Aldborough, as thriving, though without a port, as the other is decaying, with a good river in the front of it. There are some gentlemen's seats up farther from the sea, but very few upon the coast. From Aldborough to Dunwich there are no towns of note. Even this town seems to be in danger of being swallowed up, for fame reports that once they had 50 churches in the town. I saw but one left, and that not half full of people. This town is a testimony of the decay of public things, things of the most durable nature, and as the old poet expresses it, by numerous examples we may see that towns and cities die as well as we. The ruins of Carthage, of the great city of Jerusalem, or of ancient Rome, are not at all wonderful to me. The ruins of Nineveh, which are so entirely sunk as that it is doubtful where the city stood, the ruins of Babylon, or the great Persepolis, and many capital cities, which time and the change of monarchies have overthrown, these, I say, are not at all wonderful, because being the capitals of great and flourishing kingdoms, where those kingdoms were overthrown, the capital cities necessarily fell with them. But for a private town, a seaport, and a town of commerce, to decay, as it were, of itself, for we never read of Dunwich being plundered or ruined by any disaster, at least, not of late years. This, I must confess, seems owing to nothing but to the fate of things, by which we see that towns, kings, countries, families, and persons, have all their elevation, their medium, their declination, and even their destruction in the womb of time, and the course of nature. It is true, this town is manifestly decayed by the invasion of the waters, and as other towns seem sufferers by the sea, or the tide withdrawing from their ports, such as Orford, just now named, Winchelsea in Kent, and the like, so this town is, as it were, eaten up by the sea, as above, and the still encroaching ocean seems to threaten it with a fatal immersion in a few years more. Yet Dunwich, however ruined, retains some share of trade, as particularly for the shipping of butter, cheese, and corn, which is so great a business in this county, that it employs a great many people and ships also, and this port lies right against the particular part of the county for butter, as Framlingham, Halstead, etc. Also a very great quantity of corn is bought up hereabout for the London market. Therefore I shall still touch that point, how all the counties in England contribute something towards the subsistence of the great city of London, of which the butter here is a very considerable article, as also coarse cheese, which I mentioned before, used chiefly for the king's ships. Hereabouts they begin to talk of herrings and the fishery, and we find in the ancient records that this town, which was then equal to a large city, paid, among other tribute to the government, 50,000 of herrings. Here also, and at Swole, or South Olay, the next seaport, they cure sprats in the same manner as they do herrings at Yarmouth. That is to say, speaking in their own language, they make red sprats, or to speak good English, they make sprats red. It is remarkable that this town is now so much washed away by the sea, that what little trade they have, is carried on by Walderswick, a little town near Swole, the vessels coming in there, because the ruins of Dunwich make the shore there unsafe and uneasy to the boats, from whence the northern coasting seamen a root verse of their own using, and I suppose of their own making, as follows. Swole and Dunwich, and Walderswick, all go in at one lousy creek. This lousy creek, in short, is a little river at Swole, which our late famous atlas maker calls a good harbor for ships, and rendezvous of the Royal Navy, but that by the by, the author, it seems, knew no better. From Dunwich we came to Southwold, the town above named. This is a small port town upon the coast, at the mouth of a little river called the Blith. I found no business the people here were employed in but the fishery, as above, for herrings and sprats, which they cure by the help of smoke, as they do at Yarmouth. There is but one church in this town, but it is a very large one and well built, as most of the churches in this county are, and of impenetrable flint. Indeed, there is no occasion for its being so large for staying there one Sabbath day. I was surprised to see an extraordinary large church, capable of receiving 5,000 or 6,000 people, and but 27 in it besides the parson and the clerk. But at the same time the meeting house of the dissenters was full to the very doors, having, as I guessed, from 600 to 800 people in it. This town is made famous for a very great engagement at sea, in the year 1672 between the English and Dutch fleets, in the bay opposite to the town, in which, not to be partial to ourselves, the English fleet was worsted, and the brave Montagu, Earl of Sandwich, admiral under the Duke of York, lost his life. The ship Royal Prince, carrying 100 guns, in which he was, and which was under him, commanded by Sir Edward Sprague, was burnt, and several other ships lost, and about 600 seamen, part of those killed in the fight were, as I was told, brought on shore here and buried in the churchyard of this town, as others also were at Ipswich. At this town in particular, and so at all the towns on this coast, from Orfordness to Yarmouth, is the ordinary place, where our summer friends the swallows first land, when they come to visit us, and here they may be said to embark for their return, when they go back into warmer climates, and as I think the following remark, though of so trifling a circumstance, may be both instructing as well as diverting, it may be very proper in this place. The case is this. I was some years before at this place, at the latter end of the year, viz. About the beginning of October, and lodging in a house that looked into the churchyard, I observed in the evening an unusual multitude of birds sitting on the leads of the church. Curiosity led me to go nearer to see what they were, and I found they were all swallows, that there was such an infinite number that they covered the whole roof of the church, and of several houses near, and perhaps might of more houses which I did not see. This led me to inquire of a grave gentleman whom I saw near me, what the meaning was of such a prodigious multitude of swallows sitting there. "Oh, sir," says he, turning towards the sea, "you may see the reason. The wind is off sea." I did not seem fully informed by that expression, so he goes on, "I perceive, sir," says he, "you are a stranger to it. You must then understand first, that this is the season of the year when the swallows, their food here failing, begin to leave us, and return to the country, wherever it be, from whence I suppose they came, and this being the nearest to the coast of Holland, they come here to embark this. He said, smiling a little, and now, sir, says he, the weather being too calm, or the wind contrary, they are waiting for a gale, for they are all wind-bound. This was more evident to me, when in the morning I found the wind had come about to the northwest in the night, and there was not one swallow, to be seen of near a million, which I believe, was there the night before. How those creatures know that this part of the island of Great Britain is the way to their home, or the way that they are to go, that this very point is the nearest cut over, or even that the nearest cut is best for them, that we must leave to the naturalists to determine, who insist upon it that brutes cannot think. Certain it is that the swallows neither come hither for warm weather nor retire from cold. The thing is of quite another nature. They, like the shoals of fish in the sea, pursue their prey. They are a voracious creature, they feed flying, their food is found in the air, viz. The insects, of which in our summer evenings, in damp and moist places, the air is full. They come hither in the summer, because our air is fuller of fogs, and damps than in other countries, and for that reason feeds great quantities of insects. If the air be hot and dry, the gnats die of themselves, and even the swallows will be found famished for want, and fall down dead out of the air, their food being taken from them. In like manner, when cold weather comes in, the insects all die, and then of necessity the swallows quit us, and follow their food wherever they go. This they do in the manner I have mentioned above, for sometimes they are seen to go off in vast flights like a cloud. And sometimes again, when the wind grows fair, they go away a few and a few as they come, not staying at all upon the coast. Note. This passing and repassing of the swallows is observed nowhere so much that I have heard of, or in but few other places, except on this eastern coast, namely, from above Harwich to the east point of Norfolk, called Winterton Ness, north, which is all right against Holland. We know nothing of them any farther north, the passage of the sea being, as I suppose, too broad from Flamborough Head and the shore of Holderness in Yorkshire, etc. I find very little remarkable on this side of Suffolk, but what is on the seashore as above. The inland country is that which they properly call High Suffolk, and is full of rich feeding grounds and large farms, mostly employed in dairies for making the Suffolk butter and cheese, of which I have spoken already. Among these rich grounds stand some market towns, though not of very considerable note, such as Framlingham, where was once a royal castle, to which Queen Mary retired when the Northumberland faction, in behalf of the Lady Jane, endeavored to supplant her. And it was this part of Suffolk where the Gospelers, as they were. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.